Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Grant Britton. Hey, Grant.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thanks for joining us.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
So for our listeners who may not know you, Grant, can you kind of give us a background on yourself and how you got started in photography?
Well, I started in taking photos in 1979, and I worked at the Del Mar Skate Ranch and just borrowed a roommate's camera and started shooting the pros and the locals that were coming through. And it just kind of took off, you know.
That's an understatement, I feel like.
Yeah, it just, I was already into art and everything. I was taking art in college and I had taken it in high school. I started shooting photos and just realizing how great of a hobby it was. And then in a couple of years later, I went into the darkroom with a friend and printed some of my black and whites that I had been developing. And I didn't own a loop. I didn't own a light table. Ugh. I was just kind of holding negatives up against the, you know, up to the sun and looking at them and not knowing what I was doing. I wasn't making any prints. I didn't have any money. And so then I went in the darkroom and I just blew my mind. And the next day I changed all my art classes to photo classes and just took three photo classes, you know, like the next day I changed my major pretty much. And then the next couple of years I went to Palomar College in San Marcos, California, and just took every photo class I could take. And I mean, it was really, really great. And then I had a couple of really great teachers, and then I pulled that all into my skateboard photography too. But I had never shot photos before skateboarding.
Oh, so.
That's crazy that it all started from a borrowed camera. I love that.
Yeah. And then I ran out and bought a new camera. Well, I bought a used Minolta from some little shop in San Diego. And a friend of mine that was already into photography took me there. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know about f-stops or shutter speeds. I was just shooting haphazardly. And I'm not a very technical person. So I really had to have everything explained to me. And it didn't really all come together till I got into college.
Yeah. I like when it clicks. That moment is... We have talked about that a couple times on the show. Just like, I remember messing around with strobes and stuff like that, and it all kind of just was like, oh yeah, that's it. Now I get it. And it makes things so much easier when you know what you're doing.
I was going to say, I can relate to like trying to take every photo class there was. I was in the community college and there was one. There was one darkroom class. And then I was like, okay, can I take it again? And they were like, no, you already passed it. You can't like take it again.
You should have flunked it.
Yeah, I know. I should have.
Yeah.
Man. It's funny.
So what, were you going to school, to kind of backtrack a little bit, before the whole photography thing, was it like painting? Are you a painter? Do you still paint? Do you still
kind of
mess around? I was a lot of drawing
and life drawing and cartooning. I thought I might go into cartooning. I look back at it now and I go, I wasn't very good at it. So, and then photography just was quicker and there was that instant gratification and I liked the way it was like magic to me going in the dark room. Yeah. I mean, it just that you could do that with chemicals. And then I really got into the history part of it and I was taking a history of photography class and then I was taking a color slide class and a basic black and white darkroom class. And, you know, I was there every day and, you know, from the time they opened in the morning till the time they, you know, closed. And then I was working at the skate park in the evening still. And that was all before, you know, the magazine started and everything.
When did that start? When did that come into fruition?
Well, in 1983, Larry Balma, who owned Tracker Trucks, came to me. And I'd had a couple of things in Thrasher back in the early 80s. I think they started in 81 when they needed something from down south, you know, because they were up in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
They would call me. They just knew me as being the guy that worked at the skate park. And then I was the manager at the skate park in the pro, the pro
That's
shop.
A perfect connection.
Yeah. So people, they would start calling me because they, you know, Thrasher and Indy sponsored people in San Diego. And then they would call me to, you know, get a shot of Billy Ruff or somebody like that for Thrasher. And I probably had maybe 6 photos done in Thrasher. And then I knew Larry Bama from working at the skate park. And then he asked me to give him some photos for a newsletter, air quotes. Mm-hmm. And then invited me up a couple months later. And I went up and saw this magazine laid out on the wall. And this is the days of, you know, paste up before computers, everything was hands on, paste up work. And I mean, it was totally different than now, you know, and we didn't know how to do magazines. So I just got more and more involved in Transworld from the first issue. And then eventually I quit my, like a year later, quit working at the skate park and just was the photo editor and set up a dark room at the magazine. And I pretty much just set it up how Palomar's dark room was, because that's the only dark room I'd ever worked in. Yeah. Even my dark room now, or the one I work in now, is set up like Palomar, you know, from, you know, over 30 years ago.
Yeah, I guess you get kind of stuck. Not stuck. I hate saying stuck because you're not stuck. But like when, you know, I do the same every time I set up. I do like a little mobile darkroom thing. I haven't done it in a while, but I'll bring in like an enlarger and trays and all that stuff. And I always have, no matter where I am, I always set it up the same way because you kind of have your own routine with things. It's a part of it. I feel like the ritual is a part of the whole thing.
Yeah. We have a new darkroom. We have a collaborative out in Escondido called the Photographer's Eye Collaborative, Photographer's Eye Collaborative. And it's a gallery and a darkroom. And the darkroom just got done. And I went into there the other day to work in it for the first time. And one little thing threw me off. And it was that the timer for the enlarger was on the wrong side.
On the right.
Yeah. Because I'm used to having it on the left side because I'm right-handed and I need to dodge and burn with my right hand. And it was set up the opposite and it was just bugging the crap out of me. I mean, it just like blew me away. And then I sent Donna, who's these are all ex-Palomar people. The head of Palomar College's photo department retired and she wanted to have like a public dark room.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome.
And so she started this thing up and it's a really great dark room. And, but that one little thing, I asked her if she was left-handed and she goes, why? And I go, oh, because the timer's on the wrong side and it bugged the crap out of me. So yeah. And then she didn't notice it. She hadn't worked in the dark room yet. So, so I knew the next time I was going to go in, I was going to switch everything around.
Swap it back. Yeah. So I guess that means that you're still in the darkroom printing then. That was one of my questions I had for you. You still do a lot of printing or?
Not a lot. I had a darkroom 2 years ago. I closed down my darkroom that I had. I was part of another art group called the Artist's Odyssey. And we had this extra room. We were getting free rent for a couple of years. And I put all the I got all of Transworld's darkroom stuff when they shut down their darkroom. Somebody, I didn't even work there anymore. And somebody called me and asked me if I wanted the darkroom equipment. It was like a Bessler enlarger and all, I mean, really great equipment. And they were just going to take it to a garage or like to a thrift store or something. And I said, oh, no, I'll grab it. And I loaned it out to a couple of people over the years and I finally got a darkroom space like three or four years ago. I set it up and worked in it for probably a year and a half before we lost the building. And now it's sitting in my garage. So in storage in my garage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a piece of history though. Mm. We need to put that somewhere.
I know. Do you think you'll set it up again in your garage or?
I don't have room in my garage. Yeah. So I'm part of this collaborative and we have our own building and it's a much better dark room too. I was like, mine was full budget and, you know, no plumbing and I had to take everything into the kitchen to wash it. And
my first dark room was under the stairs at my parents' house and like, you know, I had to run upstairs and rinse everything. Like being in a dark room with running water is like a dream.
Yeah. So that's how the new one is, and it's really it's really nice. So I just went in there a week or so ago and printed about 10 prints of one negative. And then I started selling those on online in my shop just to, and it was a negative from 1987. So
I hadn't
printed it since then, you know.
Wow.
I mean, I printed it digitally and stuff, but not, right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Not from the darkroom.
Man. Yeah, I'd love to see some of the stuff that I've shot. I haven't done any wet prints in a long time. I really need to, I keep saying that I'm going to get back to doing it, but it's just such a damn process get everything loaded into the bathroom, the lights set up, block out the curtains, like do, man, it's just.
Well, and kids, they don't know. You know,
yeah.
Kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's popular, you know, like the high school that my kids went to school here in Encinitas, San Dieguito. I sit on the board. They're like a advisory board there.
Oh, okay.
And for the photo department and a couple other high schools and Palomar College, I'm actually on their advisory board now. And every year there's like, should we keep the dark room? And we're like,
yes.
We're all old people and we just go, yeah, hell yeah, keep the dark room. You know, and kids now, you know, it's uncool. A lot of them only want to shoot analog stuff or, mm-hmm.
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So they don't want to shoot with a digital camera. So it's pretty cool. I meet more and more kids like that. You know, at first when I started, I was on the board there or being a mentor or whatever, I'd ask, how many people have worked have shot film? And like one person.
Yeah.
Now it's you see a lot more. And
yeah, even walking around downtown here, I see a ton more kids walking around with, you know, Minoltas and Canon AE-1s and stuff. And
Hasselblads.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are buying Hasselblads and Leicas because I think their parents are just cashing them out. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's weird when I see kids with Hasselblads and I go, wow, that's pretty insane. Took me years to get one.
Yeah.
I still have mine. And I still have my 30 millimeter lens too for shooting skating.
Man.
So
wow.
Back then, you know, medium format took over skateboard photography back in the 90s, late 90s. And, late 90s and then into early 2000s before digital got, you know, good enough to, you know, be in the magazine. But
yeah, yeah.
So everybody had to run out and get a $4,000 to $6,000 fisheye for it.
Jeez.
Yeah. Mine was like $5,000, I think. It was like,
man.
And so I'm not getting rid of it.
No, hold on to that.
Uh-uh. I wonder what those go for now. I need to look that up because it's funny because we had a, last episode we had Jason Lee on and he was talking about the Mamiya RZ67 system of how expensive it was when he bought it back when, like, you know, that's what people used. Not that they're not using them now, but when he was buying it at cost when they were popular to what you can pick things up for now. Because I mean, I know a lot of people didn't shoot Hassies back then because they were so expensive. It was just such like a premium quality thing. I mean, now you can get a body for, you know, $500 to $700 or something like that. And that's pretty cheap. I mean,
yeah,
you can get a lens and a body for, you know, like under $1,500 now.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, it was just so expensive. But everybody had to have one if you weren't shooting.
Yeah.
And me as a photo editor, you know, when we started the skateboard mag, we even changed the format of the magazine to fit Hasselblad better.
Whoa.
Really?
Yeah, it was a little wider and it was more square. You know, it was still, you know, a rectangular format, but it was a little on the wide side, you know, and it was to handle the square format.
Yeah, you don't want to crop anything.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering about that with the Transworld stuff. Like if you guys did a lot of cropping with the images, I guess you had to fit kind of like a full page spread, you'd have to crop the image down because it's square, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, we did you know, full bleeds, you know, full page bleeds and and bleeded spreads. And yeah, you had to, you know, I always shot so tight, you know, I was always, you'd shoot for a cover, you'd shoot a certain way. Oh, this is for the cover. Yeah. So you'd have to leave room at the top for the logo.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And and back then you had all the cover blurbs and, you know, and you got to get your hot, you know, in the 80s, you needed all your hot pink and splashes and drip paint and everything. So, yeah, you shot differently, you know, for different things. If it was for a spread, you would try to, you would try not to put the action in the middle because you didn't want the person in the gutter of the magazine. Yeah. And you'd try to have them on either the left or the right side. And yeah, you did shoot a certain way back then.
It makes me think of like shooting bands for MySpace. Like shooting to make sure they had like room for their logo on the side and stuff like that. It's kind of funny.
Or now it's everything's horizontal for online, you know?
Yeah, and true.
Like, yeah. You know, with skating, you shoot for different tricks or different kinds of skating. It's vertical or horizontal. I mean, lots of times if you're shooting for online, everything's shot so loose, you know?
Yeah.
Because of the horizontal format. And people, you know, I get asked by clients, you know, for more horizontal. I'm like, ugh. Yeah. Compositionally, it doesn't always work.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I always cringe when I see video shot that way. I'm just like, no, it's not meant to be that way.
Yep. Man. So, Grant, when you were the photo editor, were you still shooting or did you kind of like, you know, switch into the photo editor mode?
No, I was always shooting. And I think that's the way in like action sports. Is, you know, snowboard, surfing, skating, photo editors shoot photos too.
Oh, cool.
And they write and, you know, it's, yeah, I never quit shooting. My main thing was photography and photo editing. I was just trying to pick the best photos and work with the art director and work with the writers. And then I started sending people out. You know, there were things I liked to shoot and then there were things that I didn't like to shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, when it got to where it was, you know, it was street skating and the sweaty van tour. I didn't really want to go on some of those. I wanted to go on. I wanted to go on the good trips. So I didn't do a lot of the grunt work. And then I got to where, as I got older, I started shooting a lot more, you know, locally and, you know, in San Diego. And I got, you know, I kind of got tired of driving to LA and not getting anything during the street skating of like the 90s. I mean, it's all street skating now, but the 90s, it got really, you know, it got a lot more illegal and, you know, there were more cops and more security guards. And you'd drive up to LA, you know, start shooting and then you get kicked out and then drive all the way back. You know, we're 100 miles from LA. So, yeah, my weekends were taken up for 20 years. You know, meanwhile, we were having kids and I finally, when I hit 50, I just went, you know what? I don't want to shoot street skating anymore. And, you know, I figured I'd shot everything good that I was going to shoot and then just got to leave it to the young photographers and because they've still got that fire, you know, lit underneath them, you know, and they're still trying to make their way in photography and they don't mind going through all that, you know. I got to where I started to get a little salty about it, you know. And now I'm 63, I just shoot, you know, photos that I want to shoot, you know.
That's a good place to be.
Are you tied to any publication now? Like do you work for a magazine at all? I mean, I know there's only like one left, isn't there? Or
I did Transworld for 20 years and then 2003 a group of us quit Transworld because of the whole Time Warner thing. And we started the skateboard mag. And so it was with Dave Swift and Kevin Wilkins and Atiba and Akko Jefferson and a few other people. And we did that magazine till 2015. And doing an independent magazine it was like a nightmare, you know, when you're trying to be independent. We weren't taking outside advertising. Yeah. The rule on our advertising was they had to have a skate team. We didn't want to take any.
Oh, that's
awesome. We weren't that's taking cool. drink companies unless they had a skate team.
Yeah.
But it was mainly skateboarding. And then hard goods got hit really hard, you know, like trucks and wheels and boards. Mm-hmm. It was hard for them. And we were doing really well in the beginning, starting in 2004. And then when 2008 hit, you know, and the the crash. Yeah. I mean, it got harder and harder, and we had a good business model where you have to change the quality of the paper and you have to change the size of the paper. And, you know, you've got a ratio of ads to editorial, and we stuck with that. And then we had an offer to buy the magazine, and we sold it. And then that lasted a couple of years, and then I got laid off, and a few other people had been laid off over time. And yeah, now, you know, magazines, I'm not working for any magazine. I contribute to magazines, and not to,
yeah.
I don't contribute to Thrasher. I just haven't had an offer, but I contribute to other magazines, foreign magazines. I'm working with a English magazine called Same Old, which Same is old. Okay. Kind of a print to order magazine, but it's really about history of photography and skate photography.
Yeah,
it's kind of a cool magazine, and it just comes out when they can get it out, you know.
Oh, that's
so. But I'm relicensing photos, and you know, I work with Vans and Nixon and some other companies.
I feel like hearing you talk about, you know, the skateboard mag, like how independent and stuff like that, like just even me putting together like a 40-page zine is like a complete pain in the ass. So I can't even imagine putting together like a full-blown magazine, especially having such like, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that you guys didn't take, you know, like Mountain Dew and crazy. Well, I don't even know if they have a skate team. I feel like they do. They sponsor everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a really cool idea to keep it kind of, you know, real.
It gets
advertising is so crazy, because I mean, even with this podcast and stuff, we deal with stuff like that, mm-hmm. and it's like, like there's a line, and it's weird, and I don't know.
Yeah, it at Transworld, it just got to where you were making excuses, you know. Well, with all these ads, we get to put more editorial pages in the magazine, but there's times when I think when the AOL disc got dropped into the magazine.
I don't even remember that.
You remember when you'd get an AOL disc?
Yeah, they used to come to our house. Yeah,
that got dropped, inserted into the magazine, and we didn't even know about it until it came out. And then, and you know, because they were in New York, we're in Oceanside, California, and so then one of our editors, Eric Sentienen, apologized to the readers in the editorial of the next mag.
Oh, man.
And almost lost his job. And it just got, and then they fired some people that our publisher at the time. And he was kind of the last, he was a friend of ours, and he was kind of the wall between us and New York and corporate. And that's when we seriously started thinking of finding a new mag, you know, doing our own magazine. And you're always, you know, what's funny about corporate is that, and I'm not totally anti-corporate. There are good things. I mean, like health insurance and things like that. Yeah. So, I'm not totally anti-corporate. I did love, like, you know, at Time Warner, you pretty much got free medical. I think I paid, $14 a month or something crazy like that. So I like that part of it. But people above you try to tell they make you believe that you can't do things on your own. And they would, you couldn't do a magazine by yourself. And then when we resigned, the guy that was, it was some, this guy, he was a suit that they put in, he was the wall.
Yeah.
Well, no, he was the leaky wall. And, and he said, you know, that day after we quit, they told us, he told our old coworkers that, yeah, I wish those guys all the best of luck, but they'll be out of business in 6 months, you know?
Wow.
So, and we heard about that because we still had friends over there and everything.
Sure.
But
yeah.
So they just try to make you believe that you can't do it. And then I became the production manager. And you know, when you're working with a printer and there's customer service people, they want you to put out a good magazine. So I just told them that I was a dumbass photographer, you know, and that I didn't know anything about producing a magazine. I knew how to pick photos, but I always had somebody over my head, you know, just like, and you can't, I would get written up for like jumping the chain of command and things like that, you know, because you're trying to do things and you're tired of waiting for someone, and then you just go and do it. And you know, and we're skateboarders, you know, we don't want to be told what to do.
Sure.
So, no, not at all.
Yeah, and you can do it. You can do a magazine. And we did it from 2004 to, you know, 2016. So, and then the economy and well, the state of magazines and social media and everything just killed it.
I was just going to say that's kind of like you get in your head about anything. Like you just think like, oh, well, I can't do that because it's like this and this and this. And I just love hearing you say like, yes, you can. You can do it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I still tell kids that, you know, kids want... I do a lot of talks at schools and, you know, high schools and in college. And I don't know what to tell kids anymore. You know, you know, I want to be a magazine photographer. And you're like, well, yeah, you, guess you better start your own magazine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Sure.
You know, how can I, you know, how can I break into it? I don't know what to say anymore. Yeah. You know, when I started, there were 4 photographers and now there's thousands and
sure.
I mean, everybody's got a camera in their pocket, so mm-hmm. and which take really good pictures.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah,
they do.
All those filters and everything else.
I always tell kids to just think of something new, go to large format. You know, the things that stood out in my mind. It was like, I don't know if you know Brian Gaberman.
Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah, he was a skate photographer, and then he left, and he was kind of an art photographer for a while, and then he came back to skateboarding and he brought large format and it had a different look. You know, he was shooting with you know field cameras and things. He was shooting skating with it and medium format, and he really had a different look. And so I always, you know, told people to look at his work, you know, mainly kids, you know, and try to think of something different, a different way to shoot. And then there's the whole, what I like about analog is the craft part of it, and it's not fast. Yeah. It's not immediate. Agreed. There, you screw up a lot, you know, and that's just part of the process.
I love that.
Yeah, I love that advice. I heard you talk about, I forget what interview it was. I was like, before we even got to all meet up at the film photography Padilla, like I was, you know, a fan of your work. I love skateboarding, grew up into skateboarding and stuff like that. And you were talking about shooting, you wish that they... Type 55 film kind of never left. And I'm one of those people too. Like, I'm completely obsessed with that film. And I still buy, like, you know, $200 boxes that have never been opened. And then I try it and it's dried out. And I'm just like, no. Because I'm just so into it. It has something that, you know, no other film had. So, did you do a lot of portraits with that stuff? Or what were you mostly shooting with?
Mainly portraits. I shot portraits and then I shot. Like, I listened to a little bit of Jason Lee, and he was talking about how Polaroid was the pre-digital, and that's how a lot of times that's how we used Polaroid. And I had one for my Hasselblad and one for my 4x5, and so a lot of it was you'd go to shoot, and I'd usually use, for work stuff, I'd use color, usually color Polaroid, because I'm usually shooting it, you know, on Velvia. And then with the 4x5, I shot mainly portraits and a little bit of small product stuff. But you used that before you switched over to film, you know, just to see how it looked. And a few people used, you know, a few skate photographers used Polaroid, you know, Type 55. And that's what I usually used, was Type 55. I just love that film, and that you get a negative with it, and it's not perfect, but the tones are so nice on it. I mean, they're beautiful, you know. So, and I have a bunch now, but it's dried out, and I tested it. I was thinking that it was I thought my Polaroid back was messed up, and so I went over to my friend's house locally, and we got his out, and then I realized it was just all dried up, and But I did find some outdated Portra, so I shot a couple of portraits of him and that was the last time I shot 4x5. Was a few months ago, really. No, if they still made the Polaroid, I'd love to use it some more. That film was unbelievable.
It really was. I mean, it was just especially the negative. Like, I love the frame lines and the little circles that you get on top. And it's just like such a cool thing. And like, I wouldn't say I was too young for that time, I just didn't, I wasn't there, you know, like, yeah. I got into photography again, like, later in life. I did it in high school and, you know, had a point and shoot camera with friends and stuff like that, and a little like Casio digital camera and stuff, but it mm-hmm. didn't really click until like my third attempt of life moving to Tennessee and trying something different, and you know, it just kind of fell on my lap. And
where did you move from?
I'm originally from Pennsylvania. Oh, okay. Like right in the middle of the state, like Hershey, Lebanon, mm-hmm. Lancaster area, kind of an hour away from Philadelphia. Spent mm-hmm. a lot of time in Philly growing up, you know, skating, living, just doing a bunch of stuff there. But yeah, it's just the South seemed a little more enjoyable. I mean, it's way more hot and humid here than back there, but that's okay.
Yeah, but those were the days that I think you just tried every film that came out.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah,
there was this period where we shot all T-Max 3200, you know, and we could do sequences. We'd turn our flashes way down and they would recycle fast enough to do, you know, evening and nighttime and indoor sequences. But we shot every film that came out. A lot of people don't know about Polaroid, the 35 millimeter Polaroid film was unreal.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a mm-hmm. little, you had the little developing thing and
with the pods.
I've been digging out a few of those lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And Scala. We were shooting Scala and, you know, we just shot everything.
I don't know that.
Yeah, what's Scala?
Film.
Agfa.
Okay, yeah.
Black and white slide film. And it's amazing for projection. It doesn't look real good printed in a magazine. It comes out kind of gray, you know, flat. Mm.
Mm-hmm,
but it's great for projection. I'd use it in slideshows and it was amazing. So, yeah, that was another film that was... You know, and then back when I started, there was recording film and Tech Pan and Panatomic X and Plus X. And, you know, and then I got hooked on Tri-X. Pretty much have shot that my whole career, pretty much.
It's a good one. It's a good film.
Would you say that you're predominantly a color shooter, or were you kind of like split down the middle, like half and half with black and white and color?
It was split down the middle. Well, it had a lot to do with weather, too.
Okay.
Sunny days you shot color, and foggy overcast days you shot black and white. And even now, like I used to hate overcast days back then because I'd want to get color shots for the magazine.
Right.
And then now I convert a lot of my stuff, you know, digitally to black and white just because I don't mind overcast days now. Because there's no shadows, it's easy to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I underexpose a little, and then open it up in Photoshop, and I can get a good look to it. You know, where people have asked if it's film, you can't fool Ray Barbie, but I would send him digital photos and go, "Is this digital or film?" He goes, "Dude, you can't fool me." You know, so. I never
love
did.
That.
That's so crazy. And I heard you talking too on another, I wanted to talk about a little bit when like shooting sequencing in film, because, you know, film isn't like it was, you know, like that's what you had was film. So you had to shoot like skateboarding sequences in film. And like now, you know, the prices of film have gone up so much that, you know, shooting a sequence on film is basically just like wasting film.
One whole roll.
Know?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it just cracked me up that you were saying in the interview about like how you were the old man, like stepping up for digital, like when you should have been the one that was like, you know, why aren't you shooting film? You were kind of just like, well, no, man, shooting sequences on a digital camera makes way more sense and saves so much money that, you know, and I get it. A lot of people get so angry about digital, like the whole film versus digital thing. And it's like there is, you know, digital is definitely a great tool and... For like sports photography, could you imagine like shooting a football game on like a roll of film? Like right now, because I remember I was on a football stadium one time and this was still during the film days. We were all down on the field like watching an Eagles game. We got invited on the field and just the photographers, like their quick load, they had like five cameras on them and they were just like, like just blowing through cartridges of film. My dad was just like, look at all the, like the film cartridges on the ground, like the empties. And
it's like shells of bullets.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It was funny.
Dead. Yeah. Well, with beers, you call them dead soldiers. So
yeah.
Beer cans. Yeah. Yeah. I know this guy, Don Morale. I'm always in these little groups of people. Mm. And I was in a group, the Leucadia Photo Works. And Leucadia is a little town here in Encinitas. And this guy, Don Morale, who's a sports photographer. I mean, he's really great. But he was telling me that they used to shoot sporting events, and then they'd have to go into it like a dark bag and develop their film there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then send it to AP or UPI or whoever, like right after the game was over. Wow. And they just, I mean, it was crazy. Now you just go to a computer or Wi-Fi it, or
yeah, wirelessly send it now.
Yeah. And back then he was telling me you had to do it all by hand. What I did like about film back during the magazine days, we'd go to a contest someplace and then we're on a trip and we didn't develop our photos till we got back, you know?
Yeah.
And so you might be gone 2 weeks and then you take 100 rolls of film. I'd go to Europe and shoot 100 rolls of film and I'd take them in and I didn't know, you know, I remember losing rolls, mm-hmm. like, where's that one roll? Or the darkroom messes up your roll. That my darkroom guy would, like, he lost 4 rolls once from Germany. And I saw that they were checked in on the log. And then I don't know what happened to them. They went into the trash.
Never made it past
something.
That.
That's, I'm feeling like a little anxiety hearing you talk about that. Just like.
Well, you never knew what you had, you know, back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and. You know, shoots I did where I had to shoot stuff over again like 2 or 3 times, you know. Guy skaters wearing black, it's at night, dark round's black, and you see his hands.
Like yeah, I got a floating head there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you gotta go back and shoot it and make sure they have the right clothes on or you light it differently, you know. That's when we started shooting multiple flashes, you know, early. You know, late 70s, early 80s, you shot one flash on your camera, and then we started using pocket, you know, like wean slaves, and and then we never shot. It was bad to shoot on camera flash. You always tried to get the flash off your camera. And we started using 2 and 3 flashes for a shot, and just to, you know, pop out the skater, you know, kind of backlight them a little bit, light up the background, anything to pop them out.
Yeah.
And then when we discovered, you know, I was shooting a lot of Kodachrome, and then when we discovered Fuji, and that was even better for, you know, magazine work. It was just, you know, the colors were just so accentuated, and you know, reds popped and blues popped, and I mean, for magazine work, Fuji was great. And people go, what about skin tones? And I go, I don't care about skin tones. It's about skateboarding, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not doing baby portraits.
I'm just like picturing these like elaborate setups you guys would have, and then like not being able to like see if you got it right away.
But it wasn't elaborate as far as it wasn't like studio gear. You know, we were using, you know, sun packs and Vivitars and it was to get in and get out fast because the cops are on their way. And it's a lot of like underground photography, you know, and tell people don't skate until I get set up because otherwise you get kicked out and I'm not even set up. You know, I got to set up, you know, at least 2 lights and then, you know, find the angle and get ready and. Now it's so much easier, you know, in the digital world to take those photos and see what you have. And it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know? And it just made me kind of lazy too. You know, you get.
Oh, sure.
Well, because you can just fix up stuff in post. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, you'd be shooting in the studio and you'd shoot a Polaroid and then, oh, notice you got glare on a shiny surface or whatever and you got to get rid of it. You might set up, you know, for hours in the studio for a shot. And now it's just, you know, you can just fix it up, you know, in post. So
that's so true.
So it was harder back then.
Yeah, I could only imagine.
There's one thing I wanted to say, Grant, when you were at the Darkrooms Film Paideia and we kind of got to see your like presentation. I thought it was really amazing to like see a body of work from like the beginning to where it is now. And like, for me, I've kind of did weddings for a while. Then I did, you know, set photography for a while. I've done like this and this and this. So my work's kind of all over the place. I really love that, like, your work is like so, I don't know, your work. Do you have like a favorite like aspect of your body of work or like a time period that's your favorite?
Well, I think I always say like when I was learning, you know, in like the 80s is, I called it the golden age of skateboarding, you know, the 80s when I was working at Del Mar and there were still a few skate parks there and there were maybe 30 pro skaters at the time and nobody cared about skateboarding outside of skateboarding. And
right.
And then with the magazine starting and I was able to get free film and free gear and start going on trips, that was probably my favorite time. And that's not even the time when I was making, I mean, I was working at the magazine, but I wasn't making a great living, you know. I slept on the pool table at Del Mar for 8 months.
Wow.
As night security.
Wow.
And, you know, I was living out of the back room, out of boxes, and for 8 months. And we'd go on trips and we'd be pulling, we'd have eight people in a hotel room and we'd be pulling the beds apart. And, you know, half the people slept on the box springs and the other half got the mattress. And there's a guy sleeping in the bathtub.
Oh,
and,
man.
Jeez.
You know, it's like there was no money. You got, you know, that was before per diem, really.
Oh, geez.
The first contest I drove, we rented this, it was Ugly Duckling car rentals. And it looked like the station wagon from Vacation with the wood sign. I swear to God, it was identical to that with the wood siding. And we drove up, there was probably six of us in the station wagon. And the first night we all slept sitting up in the car. And then after that, we were sleeping in, you know, trying to go to sleep. And there's a raging party going on in the same house. And, you know, we didn't have hotels or anything. I think I had 7 rolls of film and I think I had $10. So you just eat at Taco Bell and then stay at people's houses. Jeez. Or, you know, so you learn a lot about travel and about people and then hopefully, as you get older and you're more successful, you don't complain as much because you know how that back in the day it was.
Yeah, you paid your dues.
Yeah. When we got credit cards at the magazine, that's when I knew I had made it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you're on your way to Europe and stuff like that. So
that's incredible.
But yeah, that era of the 80s, I really love. I love what's going on now because it's just changing so fast. And, you know, like I talked about doing the magazine all paced up, then computers started. And then, so I had to learn, and then later on, I had to learn Photoshop and then I had to learn digital. And I was able to learn everything over just a, you know, like a span. I didn't have to learn everything at once. You know? Because I don't think I could learn all that stuff. If I was picking it up just now, it'd be so hard to pick up all that stuff and then social media on top of it. And I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It is.
We'll be right back with a couple questions for Grant right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take some questions from our listeners. And one of this week's questions comes from at Rolf Martin Utlin, and he asks, who is your favorite photographer that is still going in both skateboarding and in art?
I guess, well, one of my really good friends is Mike Blayback, and his skate stuff is amazing. And I mean, it's hard to say just one person, but his portraits are amazing, and everything he takes photos of, or he's just so good. And I get a lot of inspiration from him, and he brings me beer. So I got to say all this. So, no, he's just a great photographer. There's a few people. Anthony Acosta, I think, is one of the greats, man. You know, that's still shooting.
One of the best.
I mean, those, they don't just shoot great skateboarding. They shoot great photos. So yeah, I love those guys.
And good, good answers.
All right, Grant. So my question comes from Nori Lahonda Amari on Instagram, and she says, do you have any favorite female skateboarder photographers? If so, share them. And then she says, I'm a woman, by the way, with the rock star emoji.
Yeah. Well, I've always been ashamed that the skateboard industry is so full of men, you know, male photographers. And I've always wished there were more female photographers. And the one female photographer that I personally know and that I worked with at Transworld and at the Skateboard Mag is Desiree Astorga, who's also married to, you know, a really great skateboarder, Aaron Astorga. But she's probably the best one. And she was shooting Hasselblad and film and then went into digital later. But she does great portraits and lifestyle photos, and her action is really great. And I always tried to have her included in the magazine as much as I could. And I think she's doing mainly, she has a podcast on about football because she's a full football fanatic. So,
oh, that's cool.
But she's still around. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll Great. Have to link some of her stuff down.
Yeah,
the
I was going to say.
Pretty
yeah.
good.
Mm-hmm. All right, now for the tough question, Grant.
So, okay, it's the old desert island question. So you can only take one camera with you. And, you know, there is a photo lab there. There's like unlimited supply of film and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Or, you know, if you need SD cards or something, it really doesn't matter. But if it's a desert island, you can only take one of your cameras with you. Which one would it be?
Leica M6.
Ooh,
oh, yeah. That was
answer.
Quick.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Yeah.
Next to that, I'd say the Hasselblad, but yeah.
Is the M6 like your everyday shooter?
That's, if I shoot film, that's what I shoot with, is the Leica, pretty much. I mean, I only go through a couple of rolls a month. I keep it with me, it's a great camera. And it's the camera I had to have, you know, and I worked my way up to it. First, I got a Contax G1 because I
oh
couldn't,
yeah I love that it's
yeah,
my favorite
it's
one
good,
of my favorites
it's a great camera too and I got that because I couldn't afford the Leica and it was just that stepping stone. Like I had that for probably a year or two, and then my friend was selling a M6 and I got the M6 and I wanted a black one, but all he had was a silver, and I got the silver, and then I bought a 35 millimeter for it Yeah, no, I love that camera. And I've told my kids, never get rid of the Leica and the Hasselblad. Just keep them. They'll last you a lifetime, you know?
Man, so true.
So I think I got the Leica in probably 2001.
Yeah, and the great thing about Leica is that you can still get like your film when serviced. You know, Contax is gone. Like if mine dies, it's it.
Yeah, you can buy them so cheap online. You can just buy a new camera though. And my Contax, the battery stays on, so I have to take the battery out each time.
Oh no!
That I shoot, so, and it's kind of a hassle. So, you know, with the Leica, it's kept me from buying other cameras too. When other things come out, and like Jason was talking about, what was the RZ67 or the RB?
Mm-hmm.
I saw an RB67 at a local camera store with three lenses for like $500.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like nuts. And I was like looking at it. I go, should I buy this? And I go, wait, I have a Hasselblad. I have a Leica.
I don't
shoot enough with those. So it keeps me from, you know, because you know how it is being a photographer. And when you have a habit of, I need all this gear. And then
constant struggle.
And it sits on a shelf. You know?
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Man, so that kind of leads us into the second half of that question. It's we have like the is there a white whale? We call it our white whale camera. Is there anything that you are looking at that is still like kind of on your list of cameras that you've always wanted that you haven't had a chance to have? I mean, you got two of the greats already.
Yeah.
So.
I'd maybe like a better. Well, my 4x5 is an old Crown Graphic, and I wouldn't mind like a field camera or something, but not really. And as I'm getting older, I don't need a lot of stuff, you know. I just bought a few months ago, I got the Fuji X100F digital
camera,
the rangefinder, And mm-hmm. I love that camera too. It's a beautiful little camera, and it has analog settings. Mm-hmm. You know, the controls are analog, and so it has a feel of an analog camera. And it's my kind of walking around photo or camera when I don't want to. You know, Leica's heavier and bulkier, and
mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, I'll take that. And people don't. It's not a noticeable camera too when I want to shoot street photography and. I've shot skating with it and portraits.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's a good little camera for mm-hmm. a really good price. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But no, I've kind of just stopped buying stuff. I still buy old plastic cameras that I see at garage sales, and people give me stuff. And I've yeah. got a lot on my desk here, and I'm still addicted to cameras. I got my dad's camera. It's an old Argus, I think, Argosy or something from
yeah.
when we were little kids. That's what he shot our photos with. I've got his movie camera from that did all our
home movies,
you know, baby yeah. photos and home movies and everything. And then I've got my grandfather's camera, and I've got my grandmother's camera. So there's always those little cameras that that are in your heart, mm-hmm. you know, that have yeah. that heart yeah. connection. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I love stuff like that. You know,
same here.
Yep.
I love the sentimental everything that has to do with this mm-hmm. this thing, down to the pictures, the old family pictures, and you know,
yeah.
Yep.
I hope I get the 8mm stuff when I at some point for my dad, like all my childhood videos of me and the dog and stuff like that.
He was shooting that on 8mm.
Oh yeah.
Whoa. I
mean, I'm almost 40, so I mean, I'm
yeah.
not...
but. All mine are on VHS, so...
See, I think my dad was very, like, artistic. So he was, like, a musician and yeah. shot a bunch of, like, his own little music videos and stuff for... Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's why more so he shot it on Super 8 than...
Wow,
and plus, those cool. like, VHS was so damn expensive when it came out. It was ridiculous how much... Even yeah. a VCR was, like, $100 yeah, back when true. They first came out.
Yeah.
So I only really have, like, one more question for you, Grant, before we end this today. Do you have anything coming up, any shows or you have any book projects or anything like that coming out in the near future?
Yeah, I'm working on a book right now.
Oh, great.
Well, actually, it's going to be two books. I was working on a book. I'm working on a book with Thomas Campbell. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
him.
Yeah. I've heard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has he's an artist and a photographer. And then he did the Ed Templeton books. And Deanna Templeton's, and then French yep. Fred Mortagne
mm-hmm.
yep. did his book, and we're working on a book, and it was going to be my 40 years of photography, and the art director is Josh Higgins, who's a really great designer that I know. He was on the Obama campaign, did all the online
oh, wow.
stuff for the Obama campaign, and now he's one of the head designers at Facebook and creative
oh,
designers. Wow. Not on the website, but on everything else they do, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, any production stuff he works on, he's laying it out. And so it was going to be a 40-year book. And then after looking at all my photos, they go, we got to do two books. One's got to be the
night. That's amazing.
So we're doing a 1980s book, which is coming out in hopefully in spring of 2020. And then going to do the 40-year book after that.
Man.
Yeah. So that's what I've been working on for. It took me 2 years to go through all my photos.
I believe it.
Yeah,
I believe it.
My garage is just full of just bins and file cabinets and of slides and negatives and prints and trying to find certain prints and then losing them again and, you know. Yeah, it's just been crazy going through everything. And now I've got everything in my office here in probably three bins of plastic bins of my best stuff. And,
man. Yeah. Did you find anything that you didn't know you had
yeah.
while you were digging
sure.
through that stuff?
Yeah, I found unpublished stuff.
Oh, man.
Because, you know, my taste in photography have changed too over 40 years. And mm-hmm. And what's acceptable, you know, in photography and in skateboarding, things that didn't mean much back when I took them 30 years ago now have this extra validity, you know, because they're vintage or,
mm-hmm.
you know, a person passed away or,
right.
you know, just, it, I mean, it's just so much more interesting now. Like, I can put up an old photo that nobody saw and people freak out, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you've got all these... these fans of photography and of magazines that, oh, I had that photo on my wall when I was growing up in high school. I had that poster or hey, I've never seen this one before. And I go, yeah, because it's, we never ran it. And then people are like, how did this never run in the magazine? Well, we had a lot of photos and, you know, there's a different flavor back then, you know, and now you can, and then with social media, you can just pump so much stuff out there. You know, that's another problem. Mm-hmm, it's the content. There's so much need for content and a lot of it's not good. You know, a lot of it's crap and it's forgettable. You know, people still remember covers of magazines and they remember interviews and center spreads and advertisements. And, you know, now it's like it's up for a minute and it's gone and nobody recalls it. You know, I see photos on Instagram that could be, they would have been covers, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And now they're just like, they're just disposable.
Wow. Wow.
That's so sad. Yeah. That's so sad, like how fast everything.
I mean, there's so much photography now.
Yeah.
What is it, like 3 billion photos are shot every day or something?
That's crazy.
Crazy like that.
Yeah.
And so the people who are making it big with photography right now must be pretty good, I think.
And they have huge production teams and assistants and budgets.
You know, somebody like Art Schreiber, you know.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, I've gone to hear him speak a couple of times.
I saw him speak once too, yeah.
And I mean, he's at the top of his game, or somebody like Annie Leibovitz somebody. And you're going, I mean, they made it big in the film days, but now to be on top, you really have to have your, you know, crap together. Back when I started, there was no competition. Now there's so much competition in everything.
Yeah. I just had promo cards done up that I'm going to send out to some art directors just because, like, I'm ready to put my little toe in the game.
Yeah,
see what happens.
You should. And you know what's good about promo cards now? It's like I quit doing like flyers for shows and stuff when, you know, because of social media. And now it's okay to do something like that because it's analog and it's tactile, you know, you can hold it and you can put it on your wall and so it stands out now. Like a few years ago, you know, you just didn't do flyers anymore. Mm-hmm. And now I'm doing silkscreen posters and things like that on the side too. You know, just anything that's not digital, you know, is cool. I think
that's why we're here.
Yeah.
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 I didn't say that just for you guys. That's what that's what I believe. I mean, I still collect vinyl and I love being able to feel stuff, touch it. And display it. I save zines. People send me zines and I still save them.
Yeah, even me too, like from the podcast and stuff, we get send stuff all
my
the time.
My coffee table is stacked up.
I love stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, photoeditor.com?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. He just puts up everything he gets in the mail, you know? And And people send like little, I sent him some stuff, but I sent him some coasters and I sent him a postcard. And I think I sent him a zine that I did with somebody. And yeah, everything's just like little, it's like postcards or little zines or booklets or, you know, which is kind of cool, you know?
Man, that is cool. The tangible. Man, I have to say it before we go. Like, when you were doing your little slide presentation at the Padilla, like, I was completely speechless because I've been a fan of skateboarding, you know, my whole life. I grew up with, you know, that's what we did in my teenage years to mid-20s until I broke every bone in my body and I just can't do it anymore. And watching you know, just the fact that, like, you know, seeing Tony Hawk as a little kid and, you know, you always looked up to, like, the magazine guys and, you know, the photographers. And it's just, it was great getting to meet you in person and getting to see your talk and then, you know, getting you on the show. We really wanted to get you on the show. And I just, thanks, man. Thanks so much.
Great, Tim. Thanks.
For doing what you do.
that's what I do.
Yeah.
I always tell people I'm stuck in a rut. I didn't know how to do anything else. So I just did. I kept doing what I did, you know.
That's really funny.
Kinda
I love
had
that.
To do it.
I think it worked out all right.
It did, yeah.
I guess. Thanks.
Yeah.
So where can our listeners check you out, Grant? Your website, Instagram, Twitter?
My Instagram is J Grant Britton, the letter J, Grant Britton. And then my website is jgrantbrittonphotos.com. And that's where I have a gallery on there and a blog. And I don't work on the blog enough. I need to add some stuff to it.
I'm trying to bring mine back too.
Yeah. And then I I have my shop on there too, where people can, order photos. And I actually have some darkroom prints I'm selling on there now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a portrait of Mark Gonzalez, Natas Kappas, and Mike Bowley. And I just went in and made 10. I'm going to do a 50 eventually, and I just made 10 to sell. And
Limited edition.
Yeah, limited edition. You know, signed and numbered. So
that's great.
Man,
and I have
awesome.
Shirts and things like that.
I love your logo, by the way.
Oh, the push one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good.
Thanks. That's pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
there's a whole different story on that whole shoot, too, where it was a cover. And I wanted it as the cover, and everybody hated it at the magazine. And it was David Carson, the art director, and I against everyone else. And nobody... It was 1987. It wasn't peak action. It was black and white. We didn't want any cover blurbs on it. We just wanted black and white.
Oh, right, right.
It was maybe our first black and white cover. And Todd Swank, the skater, was my assistant. He was my darkroom guy and photographer. And he wasn't a pro skater. And I mean, it just had a lot of things stacked up against it. And then they ran it, and half the people hated it and half loved it. And now you'd run that and it wouldn't even send up any red flags at all. And
right.
Back then it was like, people were like thinking, what are they doing over there? You know, they were really wondering what if we had gone crazy or.
Jeez.
And then it just became just the norm, you know. Nothing, I mean, everything goes now, you mm-hmm. know, like that wouldn't even, people would go, that's pretty tame actually, you know.
Yeah. it's crazy to think that you're like fighting for like a good, like it's a good shot, it's a great fantastic shot, and you have to like convince people of that, like what.
Yeah.
I left for a couple of days. I had gotten a fight with someone else there, and it was pretty insulting. And then I just go, well, go ahead, do it yourself. And I left for a couple of days, and then they had to come get me.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I love that story.
I love
that's
that.
So good.
Yeah. And now it's kind of become more one of the most famous photos in skateboarding photography.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You know, yeah.
Super iconic image, man. Man. So good.
I'm not blowing my own horn, but I am.
Yeah. No, rightfully so.
Blow away.
That's another lesson for everybody. Fight for the shot. Fight for your shot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised they used it as the cover because they were so against it. And I had somebody tell me that, you know, they asked me, do you want to just do this magazine by yourself? And that's when I said, no, but you can do it by yourself. And that's when I walked out. And that was after I worked there for, you know, that was 4 years into working at the magazine. So, yeah, it's years later, the person came up and said that was one of his favorite covers.
So, of course.
And I'm like, uh-huh, okay. Yeah, that's not what I remember.
I hope he started that conversation with I was wrong.
No, he gave me a box of the magazines.
Oh, wow.
That he had found in his garage or something.
That's awesome.
And now I've lost those.
Oh, no.
I have one copy of that magazine.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. All right, Timothy, where can everybody check you out?
Guys, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Timothy Makeups. I'm also doing YouTube photography-related videos. You can just go to the search bar. It's the easiest way to find it. Just search Timothy.makeups, and you'll find a bunch of stuff on me. Chris, where are you at?
So I'm Crispy Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. And we have a Facebook page and a group. And that's where
join
we are.
And like.
Join and like. And share photos in the group. People have been doing that a lot more lately, and it's been awesome. So.
All right. Awesome.
Grant, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has been amazing.
Oh, sure thing.
We're so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me. It was my pleasure. Anytime.
Hopefully we'll see you again at the next film, Paideia. Hopefully okay. We'll keep our fingers crossed that they do another one.
I know. I'll be there.
Me too.
Awesome. Yeah, same.
All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one.
See you next week.
Bye.
First off, we want to thank Grant for being on the show. You know, we got to meet Grant back in March for the film photography Paideia in San Clemente, California with the Darkroom Lab. That was a ton of fun. I mean, it was almost like a dream come... Well, it was a dream come true for me, you know, being stuck in the middle of the country, getting to fly out to beautiful California. Even though it rained, it was still California, and I got to see the ocean and meet some of my heroes in the photography world and skateboarding. Man, it was just all around. Chris and I had such a good time. We did a live podcast. Guys, you should check that out if you haven't listened to it. It's live from the film photography Paideia. I'm sure you'll find it. It'll be one of the episodes on our playlist. But Grant, thanks again. Thanks for taking the time. It's always awesome getting to hear such like legend stories about how they, you know, got into this. And I don't know, I'm still just like completely jazzed and stoked about this episode. That's going to take us to Patreon. Guys, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Every little bit helps. Chris and I, you know, we put a ton of effort into this podcast. We work super, super duper hard, and it is our heart and soul. It is our lifeblood. We live for this thing. And, you know, all the supporters that we have supporting the show, we can't thank you guys enough. And, you know, we're welcome to have new joiners to the Patreon. So head over there. There's some tiers, you know, anything from $1 to $25. It gets you a bunch of stuff. Check it out. It's patreon.com/analogtalk. Guys, we will see you next week. Have a good one. We'll see you soon. Later.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.